other business, we also have a unique opportunity today. We want to get your ideas on key freight trends and issues to incorporate into NJTPA's next long-range transportation plan, which you'll hear more about shortly. Please note, we will apply for 1.5 AICP credits and 1.5 professional engineering CPC credits for today's meeting. If you want to apply for these credits, please be sure to put your name on the sign-in sheet. And if you have not already done so, and indicate your intent to apply. For engineering credits, please include your PE license number, and we'll contact you once the credits are approved. Beverly, would you please call the roll?
Yes. Hudson?
Here.
Middlesex?
Here.
Morris?
Here.
Newark?
Here.
Ocean?
Here.
Somerset? Union?
Present.
Governor's Office? NJDOT?
Here.
NJ Transit?
Here.
Port Authority?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have 9 voting members present and a quorum.
Thank you very much. If we could, please stand now and join me in the salute to the flag.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, now we'll consider approval of the minutes from our December Freight Initiatives Committee meeting.
I'm Morris, so moving.
Do I have a second?
Hudson, second.
Second by Hudson. Do we have any questions, corrections, deletions, anything? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Motion will abstain.
And Middlesex will abstain, too. All right, so we're going to have an update on our NJTPA Freight Division's activities. Ann, can you please update us on some of the key freight activities?
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Hello. I'm trying to wake up the room here. There is nice sugar-intensive snacks to get over that kind of lunch break here. But a number of the activities we're actually going to be talking about today, including our outreach with the long-range transportation plan and our freight transit development plan process, moving ahead quite a bit. I always like to start these meetings by providing you with some information on what's happening in the freight industry. So first of all, on industrial property, that was the subject of our December meeting, where we had a really great panel go over everything happening in freight. So we ended 2019 with a total of 830 million square feet in our area and 10 million square feet of new industrial property under construction. Now the buildings that were added, in 2019, our area added 31 buildings, 2018, 31 buildings, 2017, 45 buildings. So we added over 100 industrial buildings in a 3-year period. Not all of those are million square foot buildings. As we heard in December, and we're seeing quite a bit now, there are all types of industrial space being developed. Whether they're million square feet or a couple thousand square feet, a lot of that has to do with us, the impatient consumers, who want our products right away. So there's a balancing act between where do you put these million square foot big sort kind of initial operations and there's smaller operations that ensure that we get our items as quick as possible. So we're seeing that development occur here, and we're seeing it occur in a lot of brownfields. So that's very, very exciting news. The other item I'll bring up, because I know it's on everyone's mind, is the coronavirus. Huge humanitarian crisis. The supply chain professionals are already beginning to think through what this means in terms of goods movement and supplies in our area and throughout the world. We do know from a maritime perspective, and I'm sure we'll hear from the Port Authority later this year, 2019 was a very good year for the port. China dropped about 9% in terms of what it represents as a trading partner. It's about 27 to 28% of the trade with our port, so it's a smaller portion than the West Coast. Even that, we are probably going to see a dip in container activity. The ships leaving or serving the area, a lot of them are now being called blank ships, where instead of holding maybe 14,000 containers, they have maybe 2,000 containers. So the feeling is right now there's going to be different container activity, and then when this crisis is over and people need to get the supply chains up and running, that we are going to have a surge in activity that will probably counterbalance that. But trying to plan now for that eventual surge is happening across the sector. In terms of freight activity here, in addition to freight concept development and the long-range plan, we are working on truck parking. We've really identified three types of truck parking needs. One is related to federal hours of service, which is why you may see trucks parked on the side of highways when the clock runs down for the truckers and they can't find parking. The second is staging for industrial properties, or to go across the river, or for other pickups and deliveries. That's more localized, but still the same kind of issue. Where do the trucks go before that window, that appointment window that you have? The third type, and this is where it becomes a more regional approach, has to do with what happens when a road shuts down in a storm or something like that. Where do we have emergency space that is safe for truckers to go? So these are items that we're going to be exploring with our new work plan over 2021, not just here at NJTBA, but through the MAP forum with our sister NPOs throughout the multi-state area. So a lot more to come. And at this point, I think I'm going to turn it over to the next topic.
Okay. Thank you. And the next topic is going to be the Freight Concept Development Program Project selection, and that is going to be Jacob, who's going to give us an update.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Some of you that were here this morning may find this very familiar, but for those that didn't hear me this morning, that weren't here for the Joint Committee meetings, just a quick update on the project selection for the next round of the Freight Concept Development Program. So as you know, the Freight Concept Development Program was established to advance regional and local freight initiatives that have been identified through planning studies conducted by either NJTBA, by our planning partners, or by our subregions. About a year ago, maybe a little bit more than a year ago, we developed a project intake process for selecting projects into the Freight Concept Development Program. The process also included some scoring criteria for potential candidates. So this was developed in coordination with the RTAC and approved by the FIC at the December 2018 meeting, so a little bit more than a year. So over the last few months, we've actually implemented this project intake process to identify and select the projects for the next round of the program. And just really briefly, it's a five-step process that we developed, so I'll just quickly run through it. In step one, we reviewed close to 30 different planning documents that have been done over the last decade plus to compile a list of more than 1,000 potential freight projects. In step two, we screened those out so that only ones that require a concept development study and do not have another path to advance forward were left on our list, and that resulted in 37 projects. We then proceeded to implement to evaluate these projects using the scoring criteria that was, like I said before, developed as part of the intake process as a whole. That pre-screened, pre-scored list of candidate projects was then distributed to the NJTBA subregions. Heard back requests from three subregions, and based on that input and the process as a whole, we've selected two projects to advance into the Freight Concept Development Program in fiscal year 2021. And those projects are, number one, the Berkshire Valley Road Truck Circulation Project. And that project is in Roxbury in Morris County. The second project is the Port Reading Secondary South Main Street Grade Crossing Elimination Project. And that one is in Bound Brook in Somerset County. The selection received the approval of the Project Prioritization Committee this morning, and pending board approval on March 9th, it is anticipated that work on these two projects would begin early in fiscal 2021. That concludes my update.
Questions? Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you. Okay, we are going to call Lois up at this time for some info on the Plan 2050 overview.
Thank you, and apologies to those of you that were here this morning, because I am going to shorten it, but it is very much what I did say this morning. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about long-range transportation plans and talk about what we're doing to update our current plan, which is Plan 2045. So metropolitan planning organizations like the NJTPA are required to update their long-range plans every 4 years as a condition for receipt of federal transportation funding. The NJTPA Board of Trustees approved Plan 2045 at its November 2017 meeting. The long-range plan is based on analysis of a broad array of data such as transportation, demographics, economy, and the economy, as well as extensive public outreach and stakeholder coordination. The plan outlines needs and resources related to all modes, including goods movement and non-motorized travel, as well as things like the environment, equity, demographics and land use patterns, and emerging technologies. It has to have a minimum of a 20-year time frame. So work has begun on the new plan called Plan 2050, which will have a planning horizon of 2050. It will be presented to the trustees for adoption in the fall of 2021. Excuse me. Development includes public outreach in all 15 subregions, a financial element, and publication of several background papers ahead of plan adoption. We've also started stakeholder engagement, and some of the activities in that area have been over the past several months at our board and committee meetings. We've had presentations on demographics and the economy and climate change, which really helps to frame some of the important issues that we'll be looking at in the plan. In addition, stakeholder engagement has also started with the around freight movement. On January 28th, there was a panel with the private sector supply chain companies, which Anne is going to be talking about in just a moment. And then today, that conversation is going to continue with a similar discussion with the public sector partners. So thank you. Are there any questions?
Great. Seeing none, thank you. Okay, at this time, Anne is going to make a presentation of some key takeaways from our January 28th panel discussion we held with our senior supply chain executives on freight trends, issues, and priorities. And then she's going to lead or moderate a discussion. But I just want to say that I found the January 28th meeting to be very informative, to hear from the private sector, you know, some of the same issues that we hear on the public sector. So with that, Anne, please take it away.
Okay, first of all, show of hands, who was here on the 28th? Okay. Oh, very good. So everyone here around the table, public sector agencies, we're going to be asking you the same questions. They can start thinking about this now if you remember the questions they asked. If not, they'll come at you as a surprise. And then we will also have an opportunity for people in the audience to provide, you know, ask questions and ask comments. This is one of my favorite activities when we talk about the long-range plan, and there are lots of activities to do for the long-range plan. But the private sector freight professionals, the supply chain professionals, they're the Uber planners. They're the ones who stay up all night and try to figure out what possibly could go wrong that will keep you from getting your package or for something not to go well. They're everyone behind the curtain, making sure everything goes right for industry and for the population. So it's always very interesting to hear from them what keeps them up at night and what their priorities are, because they're the ones who provide all the services. We provide the infrastructure, they do the services. And this time, we were very pleased on how many organizations agreed to take part in the conversation for the long-range transportation plan. So we had just about every transportation mode. In fact, I think we had every transportation mode, an element in the supply chain there. Some of the names you're going to recognize, whether it's trucking agencies, railroads, companies such as Prologis and Oberon that developed the industrial space, end users, even integrated carriers like UPS. They serve the urban areas, the suburban areas, and the rural areas of our region. They handle domestic cargo and they handle international. So we had a large group, all of whom came together. These are very senior executives from these agencies who gave their time to us because they recognized the importance of working with the public sector. So first of all, let's talk about how the industry's changed. The one thing you can say about today's freight industry and supply chain industry is changing almost daily. Again, we can see this most often in retail, now happening in the restaurant business as well. But our need, our consumer needs, we've become very demanding. Again, who here has free shipping influenced their purchase to buy online? No hands? Okay, so we've given a mandate. We want it done as cheap as possible. And by the way, two-day delivery isn't good enough anymore unless you want to take the $1 digital credit on Amazon. We want products as soon as possible. Very impatient. If it's not there, we'll get it from someone else. But those kind of customer demands that we have, that sparked a whole new set of customer demands as a new generation of supply chain traffic managers at companies have come into being. And they're saying to all those transportation providers and raw material suppliers and production providers, you know what? I want to have that tracking. I want to hear as soon as possible, and I want to hear as cheap as possible. So that level of demand that was causing stress on a retail level is now throughout the industry. And everyone in the room talked about what they had to do in terms of visibility, what they had to do in terms of delivery. We also like our products in different ways, very customized. So if you're running an operation, you've been in Winter Bakery, they don't just have one type of bread. They, for example, provide all the hard-baked bread products that you'll see in Wegmans. You don't go in there and just see white bread. It's every type of magic. So all those different product types and how to handle them and how to move them and all the requirements. The other thing that was pointed out with e-commerce is the returns. So, okay, maybe you're getting your shoes online, but you get three different sizes to figure out, or colors to figure out what looks right. 30% of what we're buying online apparently goes back. So now we have this whole return stream going on that has to be handled, and this was brought up. Again, because we're very impatient consumers, many of these facilities are going to 24/7, particularly e-commerce. And as was noted by one of the people in the room, if he's looking at a site for potential industrial development, and the local ordinance says you can't operate certain hours, the site's off the table. So it really is looking at the future. There is more automation. There is more use of new technologies, a lot of environmental practices. So the industry is looking at ways to adopt that way. And again, a huge reliance on real-time information on every aspect. It's not just tracking your package, but knowing exactly where it is. And on some products, even knowing the temperature is maintained. So that reliance on information technology brings with it a whole set of issues, and we can certainly talk about cyber and so forth. But this is what's happening in the industry now. So let's start with the positives of this region. And that was really highlighted, first of all, by the number of private sector senior execs who came to this meeting, but also their belief and collaboration within the NJTPA area, that we do have a strong economy. We ended 2019 as the second largest port in North America in terms of containers. We are still the largest on the East Coast, and 2019 did see an increase in volume. We are a key population location. We've always been a dense population area in a very large consumer area. And because customers want their products immediately, everything is moving closer in. This is also something we heard at the December industrial meeting, so that need to be close by to serve us as quick as possible. Companies have realized they can't do it alone. The collaboration is absolutely necessary. The Council on Port Performance was noted as tackling a number of issues, but also public-private collaborations to advance infrastructure improvements. there's a recognition that what we do in the public sector are these longer-term projects, as well as things we can handle right away, but that there has to be collaboration, particularly in our area. The Bayonne Bridge, in terms of getting that done and allowing the larger ships through, which has had a profound impact on the type of vessels coming in. I was just at a meeting last week, and almost every carrier is upsizing the vessels calling at this port. So we may have fewer calls, but they're much larger vessels. So it made a big change. But the bigger vessels didn't necessarily result in difficult operations at the port because it was thought through ahead of time. The turnpike widening was noticed because the South Jersey market became easier to get to and also connected us with other regions better, which helped balance the fact that we don't have a lot of space for industrial buildings and some of the larger buildings would go south in the state as opposed to out to Pennsylvania. So let's talk about some of the challenges. It's no surprise to anyone in the room that the George Washington Bridge corridor came up. Certainly came up when Jeff Short talked to us in terms of congested locations in the U.S. from a truck perspective. I don't think any of us expected UPS to basically say it's their worst congested spot in the world, but apparently it is. Some people did note about port terminal congestion and getting the trucks through the terminals. And that's something, as different terminals do get their appointment systems, it could get better, though they are facing a bit of a truck driver shortage that's growing down there. It was pointed out repeatedly, particularly in rail, that we have to address our legacy infrastructure. The FRIO effort we did here, the Freight Rail Industrial Opportunity work, was noted, and there have been efforts, as noted, with the first projects through the freight concept development process that we have begun to address the need for national standard rail freight access, but a lot more needs to be done. Workforce shortages. Every single sector in the supply chain has workforce shortages. There are some people who feel, oh, just raise the salaries and that will take care of it, but that isn't it at all. It's marketing to say there are opportunities, it's training, it's retention, it's having the ability to get to that place of work. That's another point there. Instead of going to retail stores or offices, if you're going to an industrial building, are the services there so you don't have to drive? How do you get to these buildings and to the different shifts? So this is where freight kind of starts merging with the passenger side of it. Still a concern in the private sector that public sector decisions on policy haven't involved them enough where it's critical. So there clearly is a need where appropriate to work with the private sector, not in terms of just project development, but thinking through policies that could affect them in the way they do business, and certainly we'll see that with automation. And then, of course, people talked about streamlining approvals and permitting and everything that's required to get things done in New Jersey. Again, an area that we need to work on. So with that, that concludes my presentation, but it's the start of our conversation here. So we're going to start with the Freight Initiative Committee members, as well as the public agencies who are at the meeting, all of whom have joined us around the table. And we'll start with Genevieve. In terms of, I'm just going to ask you to go around the room, and I'm going to go sit down and basically start with a question for you. First of all, saying for the audience here what agency, but then noting what you see as the biggest positive for the freight system in the region, the TPA region, and then the biggest challenge. And that's the same question I'm going to ask of everyone except Beverly. You can chime in as we go around the table. So we'll start with Genevieve and go around.
Sure. Thanks, Anne. I think the positive we all know really well, and you highlighted some of those things. We generally live here for a reason. We have access to everything we need in general. The transportation system and all of the opportunities we have here for our quality of life improvements are wonderful and amazing, and it's a lot of what keeps us here. From my perspective, and we kicked it around a little bit with my team knowing we were coming, the private sector's point about wanting more collaboration is interesting because we feel like that's one of the places where we probably fall down the greatest. The local land use level decisions that are made that are sort of blind to us but end up substantially impacting the transportation system, a lack of overall coordination, sort of the lack, the ratables chase that goes on a level outside, I think, of what TPA might have to offer, certainly what we have to offer at DOT, and then we end up chasing our tails trying to fix what has now happened, either without our knowing or our peripheral involvement at best. So I think that nexus of land use transportation policy, even at the most local level, with collaboration among groups like TPA, the private sector, the locals themselves, really needs to become more robust because it's crushing us. And we've parsed out recently a few opportunities along state highways where we see the ability to perhaps get in front of some development we see coming, and perhaps there are ways to ensure that state improvements that may be done and dollars that may be invested make sense in terms of what the future may hold in that area. But those opportunities are far and few in between. Often we don't know about them. We're already, expanding access or adding a lane or fixing something on Route 80 without ever knowing what's happening off the exit or off the next exit that may be impacted in some way and almost rendering that improvement that we've now designed for obsolete. And we've seen that a few times over. I think it's something we can do a much better job of looking to design projects that take these types of things into account in the first place, of finding some way to work more collaboratively on these land use decisions as they certainly affect our state assets. Because you can say, oh, state assets, they're going to fix that. But that's not really what happens. If all of a sudden you just have a traffic mess, it's not something for some of these longer term projects that we're going to be able to get to as quickly as most folks would like, and perhaps if we put some more holistic thought into it up front, there are things that we could design for better, and that's something that's really jumping out at us more recently.
Thank you. Moving around.
Question again? Oh, question.
So the question is, first of all, knowing everybody, the area you represent, and then the great positive that you see and the biggest challenge in the current city.
Okay, Trevor Howard, principal planner for the city of Newark. I guess the positive that I see out of it was that the freight industry is growing. And as far as Newark is in a good position because it has a port and has an airport. Some of the challenges I would say was getting the local officials to address freight and address freight issues around the port. A lot of the local officials are maybe focusing on maybe retail and mixed use as far as residential housing with retail on the bottom. But there needs to be emphasis on utilizing the port area as far as north and using the underutilized sites around the area. Zoned for freight uses, but it's not being utilized. That's what I would say.
I am Kim Winnie, Somerset County. I think the biggest positive is our project planning and implementation of improvements. I think we've been doing an excellent job on the port side and air. I think rail has a ways to go in terms of getting rid of the height and weight limitations in different segments, that would connect raw materials with companies that create a product and can only compete, via rail car size. I think our biggest challenge is, well, twofold to me. It's the workforce shortages. There are a lot of people out there who, we need to do a better job with our VOTECs and even our community colleges and even our colleges like Rutgers in making sure that curriculums exist for, the types of training that exists for the new high tech jobs, you know, that are out there. And probably the second biggest challenge is getting people to those distribution centers 24/7. It continues to be a battle. And a lot of places, you know, there's initial support for, let's say, some type of bus service or shuttle that usually wanes, and then it's kind of left. You know, people are left to get there on their own device, and just keep saying, you need to go there in your single occupant car. And I think we need to do a better job. Because even in urban areas, a lot of times, you know, transit, existing public transit stops operating. So people work overnight shifts, have a hard time getting there, or early morning, and we need to do a better job of connecting those places. And if we need 24/7 public transit in places, or some type of, you know, connection to existing public transit, we need to step up our game.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Hear me okay? Stephanie Finch, Port Authority Planning Department. So I don't claim to represent all of our business line departments, but we did talk to them before we came here because, as you've heard before from folks from our Port Department, their Port Master Plan, they've already taken a look at some of these issues in the region. I wanted to lead off with a couple stats. So at our we've had a banner year 2019 across pretty much every facility. We saw 140 million airline passengers, including 11 million folks using Newark AirTrain. So while that's not great, that should give you an idea of just the kind of growth that we're seeing. At the port, we had 7.4 million TEUs, which was about 4% growth. And we saw about 3% growth on the rail facilities connecting to the port with about 665,000 containers. So it's nice to see multimodal connections growing at the port. I found this cool old ad online. It's for steel. Where is it? From 1960. You can't see too good, it's really small. But it's this bright, optimistic ad, and there's this water feature here, it's a city. And this was an ad for stainless steel to build in the New Jersey Meadowlands. Oh no, we have all these meadows we can't build. Well, let's use stainless steel to conquer these meadows. Obviously, this is a bad sentiment. And it's so nice to see how far we've come in 60 years. We don't want to do that anymore. But we do want to kind of capture that optimism for a better way of doing things. So that's something that Port Authority has really been pushing for, is that kind of optimism for sustainability, for resiliency, for researching things like sustainable aviation fuels, how we can minimize our carbon footprint across all the modes. So that's something that we are looking at. All different kind of avenues within the agency. We've got small research projects going on that. And so along with that, looking into, you know, collaborating with all of our partner agencies in the region, electric vehicles, automated and connected trucks, possibly, you know, looking even into the future of drones, whether or not they're a great idea in our region, they could come, so we want to be prepared for that. And then lastly, there's a lot of room for improvement, I think, in supply chain efficiency. So optimally using the resources we already have. Folks have already noted, you know, the land footprint here is really not going to grow. So we need more transparency in our supply chains if we're working together. And I'll leave it at that.
Going over to you, Kelly.
They didn't have a double team, she's going to start and I will complete whatever is said, maybe I think.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth, Union County, and a couple of these observations jump out right away from somebody at the county level, and that's workforce shortages or lack of access to work locations. And it would appear that developers who come to build on spec
or they're building for or their companies that are building these facilities. Do not think about who is going to be working with these companies. What are they going to get paid? What are their work hours? And how are they going to get there? Not just occasionally, but every day, and then different shifts. And it's somewhat echoing what Ken Levine from Somerset County said. In Union County, we have over 25 bus lines, primarily serving a county that's only 100 square miles, and we are also served by 4 commuter trains. That's a lot of public transportation. And yet, in this county, we always face the access issue for people trying to get the jobs because they don't have cars, they don't have reliable cars, and that leaves them sharing rides with others with more reliable transportation, or looking to what the public transportation offers them. And at some point, a long time ago, it should have come to the industry leadership that they have to do something about it. It's not just for the government to do something about it. We created transportation. I have transcabs in Union County. Cost a lot of money to put them together. We have 4,000 copies to buy this agency, or funded by this agency. So what? If we have companies that are running without any regard in their shifts to how people can get to their workplace, that and not paying living wages, giving people decent jobs that they can stay in for 5 or 10 years and make a career and have savings and have a retirement plan. I mean, a lot of this industry seems to come in, always work on short-term profits, and then leave if the balance sheets start shifting in an unfavorable direction. They're not members of the community. They're just using what they find there, and then when the burdens get, when it starts impinging on their bottom line in the short run, then we see they start looking elsewhere. So I just, it would be nice to hear more conversation on the private sector about how they're going to create better solutions to the problems that they know exist. And maybe engage government, engage other parties, but take some leadership themselves, because otherwise people are reacting to decisions that are made by others. And I think in the end, it just hurts the regular working staff, and what people need are just good jobs and access to them. And that's really what makes the economy, what will make New Jersey strong in the long run. And this, since we have a port, since it's the second in the country, that's a big economic trouble. And it would seem like it would be a source of a lot of success. And it doesn't seem, there's so much money in this picture, it doesn't seem like it would be that challenging to kind of spread around the business so everybody gets, each individual gets a little better share.
Yes.
Good afternoon, I'm Freeholder Angel Estrada. It is interesting. I found the presentation a couple of weeks ago very, very interesting. And basically what we received was a one side of the story. And I didn't hear anybody say mea culpa, and maxima culpa, what they were actually giving that presentation. The reality is that if we would all communicate more, things would happen a lot better. For example, when it came to the trains and the maximum weight on railroad cars and everything else, well, we have an old infrastructure. How much does it take to change a rail line? I think it costs millions of dollars to be able to make an adjustment to take the 286,000 pounds The reality is things don't happen automatically. Government can react to certain things, but is the priority to involve ourselves in paying for the upgrades of those railroad tracks that would only help a very limited number of individuals? Most likely it is. In some cases, it is for business. But it's how do we communicate enough to avoid the pitfalls of not being able to communicate? For example, I do know that the port is doing a tremendous job in terms of moving more cargo through their rail lines. And that is going to make our roads easier, in the people especially live close to the port or the airport. It's going to help a lot of more people, but unless the communication takes place with all of these organizations, as well as NJTPA, which is a great opportunity, a good, great place to be the broker of needs and deliveries. And I think that since everybody plays a role in this organization, both from the government side as well as public private entities, I think that's important. But the work to be done is tremendous because we are always falling behind. You'll find that if you do business with this municipality, things may move quicker than with other municipalities. So there's no given rule that says, okay, I want to start establish a warehouse over 1.5 million feet, and I want to be able to do this kind of operation. First of all, I hope a train is not waiting to get into your warehouse, because guess what? The neighbors will fight you to tooth and nail. So the realities are so many. The whistle cannot blow when you really need to have safety, because we do have a lot of ground level operations in terms of the trains in this state. So I think it was a great eye-opening for me. I think that the owners, I understand very much what they're trying to do, and yes, we relied on them to create the jobs necessary for people to live in our state, but at the same token is, somewhere along the line, there has to be play. They have to be able to do something so we can get these other things done, and that's where I think the connectivity issue is a problem. Hopefully, the more that we talk about it, I think the best that will be create those avenues for better communication, and at the same time, hopefully will make life easier for many people. I'll give you one example. Years ago, thanks to New Jersey Transit, who set up a van service at 5 o'clock in the morning for people who lived in Elizabeth who work at the airport, because they don't have bus service between the hours of, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning. So the county stepped up, working together with New Jersey Transit, set up a van service to take these people. The intention was, and the whole grant program was to pay it for 2 years, and from then on find the means that the benefactors of these employees would, you know, make sure that the payment was being made so that this would continue. The benefactors were the vendors at the airport, were the freight forwarders or the freight companies that work, I'm not giving any names, but work at the airport, have them pick up the service. Guess what? In conversation said, well, we don't do that anywhere in the country, and if you want to drop here, you got to have your own transportation, even if you have to walk to work. So, again, it goes back to the same issue that people just happen to or not want to be engaged or do not understand the concept. So, thank you.
Yeah, so remind me that tell Alan Kearns he owes me one for not being able to come here today, so I got to cover him. So you're going to be stuck with my stream of consciousness. And I wasn't here for the last one, so I might be a little off track, but I'm going to give you an NJ Transit opinion, not the NJ Transit opinion. I'm glad to see that there are some issues, like congestion, that are up there. The need for more involvement between private sector and policy. You know, there's a very long history of the public sector coming to the aid of the private sector. If we were to go back to the days of the Bee Gees, the 1970s, when almost all rail mileage in New Jersey was in bankruptcy, and the federal government and the state government stepped in to assume the operation of the intercity passenger network, the commuter rail network, which is why you have Conrail and Amtrak and New Jersey Transit. There was an awful lot of investment. The public sector has done it before and has done a lot. We should all be mindful of that, that there's not a perceived guilt. The way I see this region, NJTPA in particular, is that unlike many parts of the country where there's room to grow, we don't have it here. It's a developed, built-out area, and we're confined to the transportation arteries we have, whether it's trucks or freight trains or passenger trains or intercity trains or buses or what have you. This entire system, not rail versus highway, the entire system is basically at capacity. When the rail system was rescued back in the 70s, the way to make it profitable was to rationalize. I think an awful lot more main railroads across the state than there are now. The problem that we find ourselves in right now is that there are only just a few arteries and everything's pretty much maxed out. That manifests in a lot of ways, but when you're looking at restoring passenger service, rail passenger service on a rail car, typically in this day and age means building additional tracks, and because of other requirements, that often means building tracks alongside existing freight tracks. You can imagine the costs of that. There are specific challenges having to do with how freight moves in the state that have an effect on the passenger side. Look at the main interstate arteries that run east west. Route 80, 78. The amount of truck traffic on those roads is staggering, and it has a lot to do with changes in how the break bulk of freight happens, how freight is distributed. But it has placed all that traffic on the very same roads that people traverse to get to work. And so, how do you fix that? What we run into fundamental challenges of. We experience the congestion in this region, we experience congestion in New Jersey, but we're asked to invest capital dollars to get Pennsylvanians to New York. And so oftentimes the solutions don't come through for those reasons, and there's a whole lot of other capital needs. Those are some of the freight-related challenges. I'm always interested to hear, there's a lot of NJ Transit comment, but I don't want to get into operating subsidies. The operating bus sector, talk about that seven folks freight. From NJ Transit's perspective, though, there are several proposed projects. We call them the usual suspects. We know they're out there, where it has been proposed to increase capacity or extend the rail service. But that, again, that comes at a major cost because those same arteries are typically on the national freight network where they're bursting at the seams. And that's because there are only three main freight arteries in the state. There are seven or eight, I think, yesterday. Those are the issues we're going to have to work out. Now, again, I don't know if I kept on track. I'm doing my best here to blame Alan.
You did good.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I didn't make it to the January 28th meeting, but I still have, of course, you know, some comments. I represent Hudson County. My name is Mark. And, you know, as we all mentioned before, we live in a strong demand economy region. So, like, I studied at the University of Buffalo, and pretty much it's the opposite in that region, Great Lakes region, for a long period of time. After the Industrial Revolution, like, they have fell short when it comes to a growing economy, especially with rail, them not relying on rail as much as they used to, but this region, we definitely don't have that problem where we're competing for businesses. However, as everyone else had pretty much mentioned, there are a lot of challenges, and uniquely in Hudson County, we see a lot of equity challenges. So for example, as we talked about, lack of access or inequities to access of particular job sites. We're facing that now in Kearney Point, where, you know, we have a huge development, Hugo New, that's located there. They're creating incubators for new businesses to grow. But as we spoke to the developers there, we're facing issues where a lot of their employees are not able to drive to work, you know, because of, you know, whatever income challenges. And we see, like, a lot of the infrastructure that is currently there is it's pretty much not adequate for them to access the Kearney Point site in, you know, in a safe manner. So, you know, hopefully, I hope we can look at other ways of transporting people and goods. For example, I know in the past in this committee, we've talked about what we've heard, presentations about the Marine Highway. And I think that's, you know, one of the main goals that we should try to keep, you know, keep going forward. And other regions are doing it, other cities are doing it. So I think that's one of, you know, our solutions for this region. And lastly, when it comes to equity, we realize, especially in Hudson County, there seems to be, again, like truck, I talk about it all the time, but truck routes that are pretty much in low-income and minority areas more prominently than in other areas. And that serves, and that's because of, again, you know, the history of urban planning and engineering in the past, where the highway the Federal Highway Administration in the past just bulldozed houses in low-income areas for highways pretty much, you know, access certain port industries and locations. But now we're seeing the repercussions of that, and I think we should do better to try to increase equity in regards to that.
Okay, and I have to tell you first that basically I am a coward. And I knew there was a test this afternoon. Right after lunch, I would have had my county engineer take me home. Having said that, Ocean County is different than most of the counties, North Jersey Transportation Plan, in the fact that we are more rural. I would say 90% of the people who go to work in Ocean County drive their own car. There is basically no rail service in Ocean County. There is a rail station at Point Pleasant Beach, but that is the furthest northeast in the entire county, and unavailable to most people. I listened to Angel talk about lack of cooperation. I have to tell you, at the end of this term, I will have served 30 years on the Ocean County Board of Chosen Freeholders. And prior to my getting elected, there was discussion of the Monmouth Line, the Monmouth Ocean County Middlesex Railway. And the three counties, including my own, I'm not pointing fingers at anybody, can't come up with the best route for that line that is less expensive to everyone. In that whole time. And that discussion, as I say, precedes me from being on the Board of Chosen Freeholders. And right to today, we still don't have that line. We have an ideal place for it to go to, which is the military base, which is a tri-base of Army, Navy, and Air Force, and would be a great place for an economic driver for the county to have some rail service. But while we like that, that don't quite work for some other counties where we're going to put it through their county and through their neighborhoods, just what you were talking about. You want to try trouble? Bring it through somebody's neighborhood, because that's where the line. So that hasn't happened yet. I don't know that it will ever happen. We still hold out hope. We still have discussions. But as I say, those discussions have been going on for more than 30 years. I've got nowhere. Ocean County is developed, for the most part, as a senior citizen retirement county. That is the largest portion of growth in Ocean County. Now, over the time that I've been on the Board of Freeholders, we have grown from just over 200,000 residents to about 600,000. But it really, there isn't a great drive to bring industry to Ocean County. You know where all of our people come from? All of your people. It comes from North Jersey, for the most part, and they move out of Ocean County to get away from industry. So they don't want to come to Ocean County and have us develop a lot of industry. So if you want to develop industry, you got to bring in the transportation systems, and it's it's always the conflict in Ocean County. How am I going to get money for a rail line when another county is saying, don't put it through our county? Just sitting here with this group, we have enough people that want our money to try to force it on somebody that don't want that investment. So it really, we truly are different, because when you're in North Jersey, you're in a population center, you're in a commercial center, you're in an industrial center, and people expect you to make decisions to increase that. So none of that is to say that we shouldn't do anything. I'm just saying that the problems that we have in Ocean County differ from, I wouldn't call problems, from the strategies that you have in other parts of the county. Now, I've always kind of wondered myself, to tell you the truth, if Ocean County is in the right transport, should we be in the Southern New Jersey Transportation Authority rather than the Northern? Because we more closely mimic Southern counties. All of those are more residential, more rural. Even though we're a growing county, and we are, we're still basically rural, with the exception of towns like Lakewood. Well, Lakewood Township is not a rural town. They have their business centers, and they do more things, and that's a different town than most towns in Ocean County. My town is about 26 square miles. You know how many people live in my town? 1,500. So when I talk rural, we're rural. We worry more about where to keep the chicken farm than where to put the chicken.
You're not leaving, okay? I get that. You're not leaving.
No, we're not leaving. I'm just saying, no, what do you think about it? When I sit here and I listen, Angel, to the situations that you all deal with, they really differ than the situations that we deal with. You know what our biggest struggle is? We need money for Route 9, which is unpassable. We have two north-south corridors that go through Ocean County. One is the Garden State Parkway. That really doesn't help business, because it takes you over the towns, around the towns, not in the towns. It does bring people down to go to the beach and all that, but, you know, for the most part, people are passing by. They're not stopping. Route 9 is basically impassable. It hasn't grown since when it was put in the 1920s. It's still a two-lane highway. I was meeting with the DOT commissioner some years ago and talking about that we need two more lanes. He thought we were already two lanes each way. I said, no. We have one lane north, one lane south. And he looked at those staff and he said, is that true? And they said, yes, Commissioner. He said, well, I've changed my mind when I just told you that. So it's impossible. Those are the issues that we're dealing with, which really differ very much from my sister counties. So that's my only input. We're different. We certainly would appreciate to continue the conversation. And there are issues that we have to deal with, but they differ from the struggles and the strategies of the northern part of the state. Our population centers are not the same, and they don't mimic each other. Thank you. Did I pass it to that?
As well as you're staying with NJTBA.
I am staying with NJTBA. Yeah. You know why? There's more money here.
Forrest Kemp.
You know, I see plus and positives when we talk about workforce development. Morris County has sometimes the lowest unemployment rate in the state, or the second lowest unemployment. It depends from one month to the other. We're very fortunate. But we also recognize that there is a shortage in the workforce. A shortage, as we talked about earlier, for trucking, manufacturing. These are shortages. I think there needs to be better communication and collaboration between the industry and the schools, academics. In Morris County, we are building at our county college a engineering manufacturing plant. And we have the industry helping to build that and to train and get people trained to go into manufacturing. So we have a couple of positives. you can have an opposite commute. You can go from the east to the west and have less traffic and get out to Morris County, where we hope to have the manufacturing jobs, and we hope to have, while we have a very significant low unemployment rate, we'd like to see everyone employed. Our disadvantage, again, you can go from east to west, but our trains stop in Dover. After that, it's a very, very limited schedule. Some hours, some time in the morning, and some time at the end of the day to get people further west in Morris County. So northwest New Jersey, where Morris County sits, we really are at a disadvantage when it comes to transportation. If we could get the workforce out to us west, we still need to get them that last, as we coin it, that last mile. It's a real difficulty. So I think that we need better collaboration between the industry, academics, government. We all need to get together and sit at the table. We've done that in Morris County. We're building a manufacturing place. But we need to look at our workforce and how are we going to transport and grow the workforce. We have businesses in Morris County that have come out and have saved money by relocating to Morris County because it's cooler. And I mean cool in terms of temperature. So like one industry was saving money just on their electric bill, but they were having a difficult time filling their slots, and they hoped to grow to a third shift. And that's near impossible if you don't have transportation available. Unless people are driving out west to Morris County, we're not going to fill that third shift. We need transportation out that way. So I say that unemployment, the positive and the negatives, but also the need to better communicate with everyone. And right now, as we train in the market for marketing, as we train and we prepare for e-commerce or catch up with e-commerce, we need to catch up and get employees to those locations. And transportation's always been the main issue.
Thank you. Just to go off, and I'm not the expert. George is the expert. I just happen to be sitting in this chair, and if I knew that this was going to be going on, I wouldn't swap it. So I just want to try and make a connection between what was said here on the 28th and what I hear when I go around to different towns or see from various elected officials or people who have a stake in the game. Some of the positives, location. We're blessed that we're in a great location, whether it be the ports nearby or the rail lines that run through or the highways that run through. But again, as you can hear, our blessing is our curse, right? I mean, because then that leads to the problems coming in. One of the things that I took away from the panel discussion that was held on the 28th is, when I hear about business development, you think about working with just the business owner themselves. But I know that one of the warehouse representatives talked about they have a stake in that game now, too. So it's another person that we're able to get involved so that this way maybe we can build that communication as everybody's talking about to try and fill the employment needs that they have and make it so that their employees stay and stay longer than they currently have. As was pointed out by the freeholder from Morris County and Liza and a couple others, getting people to work is our hardest obstacle to overcome. We're building warehouses, but we're building warehouses where there is no public transportation going. So it's something that we really need to look at and work with. And as the gentleman from Somerset County said, education, how do we train our workforce? So I know Rutgers has a logistics program, a blockchain program that they're doing. We need to work that down into our county Voc-Tech schools or even into our regular schools, but our Voc-Tech schools. These are desirable jobs. They're jobs that pay well, and they're jobs that need to be filled. And we need to make sure that we get that exposure to the kids in high school who sometimes only think about, what they see. Sometimes when you expose them to what they don't see, that's a big positive. The negatives that we have going on, 24-hour, people want it 24/7, as was said. And one of the people that were up here that night or that day said that, you know, that also means trucks on the move all day and all night. And so with sort of a scattershot of warehousing that's been developed and the redevelopments that have been going on throughout the county, it makes it tough because these trucks now have to go through county roads. And a lot of these county roads are through neighborhoods, through downtowns. They can tend to clog up the traffic in the downtowns or create an unsafe situation on the neighborhoods that they drive through just because they're big trucks. So we need to address that problem. But as been said by quite a few people, communication. So we're doing a Destination 2040 in Middlesex County. It's a master plan for the county. It's based off of what was done here with the 2045. But it opens up that line of communications between the small towns who really don't have a voice because they have a lot of part-time elected leaders that, you know, are working their main job and you know, are dedicated to the position that they hold, but they just don't have enough time for things like development, to the big towns that might have more full-time leaders and more money involved to be able to draw or have this talent come in and figure out what's going on. So it opens up to make them equal players on the field. Also, the people that have the businesses in the county, you know, are involved. So we can get a voice from them. And then also just the residents, whether it be the seniors or just regular working class families, you know, we have them all involved. And I think that's going to help build a communication and provide resources to the smaller towns, give us an idea of what our real needs are so that we can go out and tackle what needs to be done.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make the meeting roundtable on the 28th. I do have some observations from being involved in freight and transportation for quite a while. One of the biggest positives, I think, of this region, something that always impresses me, is actually the access to the multimodal facilities we have here in North Jersey. I'm always impressed and fascinated every time I go down the turnpike, Elizabeth, that area, and seeing all the big container ships in the port right there, and cranes and unloading and offloading. Right in front of that, you have huge rail lines, rail activity right past there. Obviously, you're on the turnpike, you have excellent access to the Northeast region's highway system, I-95 and the turnpike and light. Then on the other side of the turnpike, you have Newark International Airport, all its freight facilities and UPS and FedEx facilities and the like there. And I think that's probably pretty hard to match anywhere in the country. The fact that we also have one of the largest population centers in the country is a real benefit to having all these transportation assets in the region. One of the other things, too, that I think is a big benefit for the region, too, a positive, is the fact that we have, I guess it's positive and negative, access to so many brownfield sites and potential future redevelopment opportunities at the various brownfield sites throughout the region. Obviously, they need to be addressed, cleaned up, and repurposed. The fact that we have so many of them, and there's a need to get them cleaned up for environmental and quality of life issues, having them available in the future for freight be a big benefit for the region. One of the challenges, and this goes back quite a while, being in transportation for a long time, is I think, play off a little bit of what some of the freeholders said about the communication, also educating the public on the benefits of freight goods movement. Like give some old examples and more recent examples. You see, there's a big warehouse distribution center being composed of Warren County. And obviously the first thing you saw popping up was opposition to the project and groups coming out against it, and very anti-development, NIMBYs, whatever you want to call it, people, those groups bringing together to fight it. But they need to be made aware of, or people need to be made aware of, benefits of that. Having the distribution centers in closer to the population centers helps to obviously get goods to the people faster, and what they want now, the 24/7 access, and like to what they want when they want it. But the alternative is all the big distribution centers you see being built out in Pennsylvania along the 78, 80, 31 corridor, these massive distribution centers with bays and bays and bays that are filled with trucks. And the alternative to having the facilities in closer to the population centers here in North Jersey, it's having those facilities out in Pennsylvania and having those goods having to be trucked in or out to the region. That obviously causes a congestion in the 78, 80 corridors and all throughout the region. So I think there needs to be a better education effort. And even in Sussex County, I can give a similar example. It goes to the multimodal. 20 years ago, we had a small airport in Sussex, Trinket Airport, that we had had the owner had applied for FAA grants to upgrade. It was a small business executive airport. And the fact is, too, that you had a regional rail line that ran right next to the airport that would have connected the Lehigh Valley all the way up to New England on the Lehigh and Hudson River Railroad. Had access to that next to the airport. You had huge open farm areas that could have been used for distribution and business development. And you also had access, probably one of our best access points, to Interstate 80, about 2 miles away, County Route 517. Of course, then the opposition came out, everybody fought it, saying we're going to make an international airport out there and all kinds of issues and problems. So that died off, and a big part of the land went into farmland preservation. Now the airport's going to go out of business. I think they're formally closing it up in the fall in September. The municipality wound up actually buying it because the alternatives, some housing developments proposed. But here we had a golden opportunity, a multi-modal facility right in the county. Did a good job of creating degradables. The fact that people weren't aware of benefits of freight goods movement and clean development like that, the facility is going to go away. And actually, the latest proposal for the facility, and funny how things kind of come full circle, they're actually talking about turning the airport into a cannabis growing cultivation operations. Now the fact that people didn't want freight and clean development there, now they're singing a whole different song with the potential for cannabis growing operation. So we'll see how that works out. But I think a better education of the benefits and need for development of freight opportunities in North Jersey would be important. Right?
Thank you. I do want to mention some things on workforce, though, that we don't leave here thinking it's as bleak as we are hearing. The Council on Poor Performance is a workforce development implementation team that involves the private sector, the public sector, and a lot of the educational institutions in our region. I know that LISA's been there. The City of Newark is heavily involved in it with a couple of really cool initiatives going on, both educationally in terms of career development. Middlesex County Community College just got certified by the U.S. Department of Labor, offering a logistics program, an apprenticeship program, and that they're actually seeking companies now to take advantage of that. So that and Union County Community College, a number of the high schools and educational systems are looking at how to begin to introduce logistics and the supply chain early on as career opportunities. The port sponsored a teacher operation down the port to get to teach the educators about some of the activities. So it is NGTP hosts those meetings that are held quarterly. It's anywhere from 20 to 45 different people that come to those meetings from New Jersey and New York. So there is some activity going on, but certainly a lot more that we have to do. There was mention about Prologis. Through the efforts there, they are the largest owner of industrial property in New Jersey, and for that matter, I think in the world at this point. They do have a workforce initiative, and they pointed out that this is happening across industrial development, where the owner of the building is becoming more involved with the occupier of the building, realizing that workforce is the number one consideration on whether a property gets occupied and whether it's successful. So it's an opportunity that they work with them on the amenities there. A lot of the buildings are now LEED certified, so they're bike racks and gyms and things you find in office buildings going into the industrial properties, thinking about workforce retention. And also beginning to think about access issues. And they're certainly rising the criticality of it. I want to make sure that we have time. We have an audience here. To give an opportunity to folks in the audience to ask the same question, if you want to take a moment and tell us what you see working and not working. And I know that Beverly will limit you to 3 minutes, so if necessary. But I do want to offer that opportunity if anyone wants to mention anything as we're having this conversation.
Two things, somewhat off the subject.
We'll get you a mic.
That count in 3 minutes?
No, you won't sleep. You're going to start the clock until you're done. Thanks,
Two things. First of all, container shipping, the container ship's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
I'll do this for you right there.
Container ship's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The world's becoming a more dangerous place every day. Question, what is going on with the insurance of these container ships?
I can't really talk about insurance on container vessels, but I had just looked a while ago, just recently, at the cost of trucking, and then was speaking actually with a third-party operator this morning before this meeting. Insurance costs have been one of the things that have skyrocketed. It used to be, and I know this number of folks that have grown up for years, $60 to maybe $62 an hour to operate a truck, including labor and everything else. That's now at $72 an hour as of November. A big increase has to do with wages and benefits, and that's great because, again, we have a shortage. Again, that's not the only reason we have a shortage, but one of the areas that has really been affected is insurance. And it's been coming up across the industry. So it's a very good point that you mentioned. And another reason why we have to educate and inform and have the information so there's an understanding of what's involved. But I can't speak directly to what's on a vessel, just knowing that there are lots of different insurance companies beyond the vessel, the container, the owner of the product in the container. It's real. It's not a pleasant sight to see when something goes wrong with a container of just how many insurance companies are down there. But it's a good point.
Thanks. The gentleman from Hudson County was brought up a number of things. One, remember Gerald Nadler wants a freight tunnel to Brooklyn. And a number of years ago, there was a question whether it should go through Jersey City or Staten Island. And since Nadler is from New York, it gerrymandered the requirements that made it, that ended up saying why instead of Staten Island, it should be through Jersey City. I think if you deal honestly with environmental justice, it would have found that Staten Island would have been a better route. So if that tunnel idea comes up again, it should be again reevaluated. Is should go across Staten Island or through Jersey City?
So I just want to weigh in, not on Cross Harbor, because I've not joined in that political But on the ship insurance question, more than the insurance, I would be interested in the creditors, the folks that are financing these large ships, because you keep seeing disruptions in the supply and demand. So a couple years ago, we had the bankruptcy of
Huntington.
And then right now with the coronavirus, we're seeing, like Ann said, a lot of kind of like dead sailings, decreasing the capacity so that the rates don't completely fall out of the bottom. And I think with a lot of the large ships, you're going to see more of what could have been small bumps in the road become bigger bumps in the road because you're trying to manage this capacity and keep the companies solvent.
And actually, New York City is a hub for the financing and capital investment in those vessels. Mm-hmm. So it's another key area when we look at the port industry for this region. It is an issue. And Journal of Commerce today was noting that the rates are falling like crazy because of blank ships right now. But then we're going to have a surge later in the year that they require air cargo to step in as supply chains start getting up and running again. And ultimately, there may be decisions to diversify production locations because, I mean, this, Fukushima and others, you can't rely on one location. And but more questions from the audience or comments?
Yes, thank you. George Reverides, Middlesex County Office of Planning. First of all, Freeholder, thank you for your comment. Looking at the challenges on the chart, when I look at congestion, I look at infrastructure, look at access. It comes back to the term that's been discussed throughout the afternoon, and that's cooperation, coordination. It's got to come down to the municipalities and the counties and the state all come together whenever these large areas are being proposed so that prior to putting the shovel in the ground, that all the discussion has been made in terms of what's going to be required in terms of infrastructure, in terms of congestion, in terms of truck traffic and what have you. I'm sure each and every one of you can cite examples in your communities where truck traffic is becoming a major issue in many of your areas, particularly your residential areas. And I feel very strongly that prior to these developments coming in, bring in the developers to these meetings and talk with them and tell them this is what the needs are going to be. This is what the ramifications are going to be, and it's just not going to affect one municipality. It's going to affect two and three municipalities. So you have to look at this regionally. On a more local plan, I would suggest very strongly when the question about county roads and municipal roads being impacted by truck traffic, that developers be required to put the stations, the rest stations, within the development of the warehouse, so that those trucks do not come out and have to park on county roads or municipal roads and be called in to unload their trucks. It becomes a very big problem on the local streets, on the county roads, so if they all bring them into the site itself, it would greatly compensate the problem, in my estimation. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, everybody. James Sherman. I'm the Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Climate Change Mitigation Technologies. We are a New Jersey-based developer of medium and heavy-duty zero-emission battery electric trucks. Working with the NJDP, we're going to be setting up the first 18-wheeler size zero-emission truck projects in New Jersey this year. We have 10 zero-emission yard tractors for the Red Hook Marine Terminal in Port Newark. We have another four for Best Transportation, who also operates in the port. We have 5 zero-emission battery electric garbage trucks that are going into Jersey City. And we have an expansive program for the second and third rounds of the VW money. We're able to do this because we partnered with Hudson County Motors, a truck dealer in Secaucus. We're the first BYD dealer in the nation. BYD is a $20 billion New York Stock Exchange traded probably largest manufacturer of electric trucks in the world. They picked New Jersey as the second largest market in the United States. They've come here. They've set up a parts and warehouse distribution center in Lodi. And they're here because they see what we see, and I think everybody else sees, that New Jersey probably has the largest concentration of diesel trucks anywhere in the Northeast. And this is the 900-pound gorilla in the room that the NJTPA has to take on. Zero-emission trucks are a solution for many of the ills that were discussed here today, from congestion to truck routes going through environmental justice communities, to the grievous health effects that it you know, puts on communities like Newark and Jersey City and Elizabeth and other places. So we have applied to the NJTPA on several occasions for funding for our projects. We've never got any grants because the price of battery electric trucks and other zero emission trucks were deemed too expensive. And now here we are in 2020, and the question becomes, too expensive as compared to what? New Jersey consumes 1 billion gallons of diesel per year. According to our research, there are 77,000 tractor units in New Jersey consuming this billion gallons of fuel. According to the NJTPA plan 2045, I believe the amount of trucks in New Jersey is almost going to increase by 100%. I think it's 90% from 2016 to 2045, just because of the increase related to the port. That has nothing to do with the existing fleet. The governor has just published the State Energy Master Plan. The number one overall strategy of the State Energy Master Plan is the electrification of the transportation sector, which generates 40% of New Jersey's greenhouse gas emissions, as well as basically all the air toxics that come off the diesel trucks. So with all that as background, I just think it's time for the NJTPA to get in the game and come up with a effective carbon management strategy for the truck freight in this state, which is overwhelming. It's overwhelming New Jersey, it's overwhelming the communities, it's overwhelming the planet. So we are here, the trucks are here, now with either CMAQ funding or other sources available to the NJTPA, it's time for this organization to get in the game and figure out a program to rapidly bring on these vehicles, whether they're battery electric or fuel cell or whatever, I do not care. But we need to have a plan for it. I thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Hello, everyone. How are you?
All righty. My name is Quincy Hendricks. I'm the CEO of World Tire Wholesale, right by the port in Elizabeth, New Jersey. So I'm kind of coming off from a different angle. But I am very engaged with our customers, and we have an abundance of customers that are truck drivers, owner-operators, and big companies, but a lot of them go in and out the port every day. So I'm on the front line, and I'm hearing what works and what doesn't. And they're talking to me every single day. So I thought it was just a great idea just to be more engaged with you guys in these meetings so I can actually be on the front line with them to have, you know, more educated conversations about what's going on. But what do I hear? A lot of truck drivers are kind of moving from going in and out the port and they're trying to find other things to do. Spending too much time in the port, very congested, and they're spending hours sitting trying to get in and out. So, you know, they're moving to dry vans, car carriers, and just finding other means to operate, right? Because they have to make money. But it's very congested, so that's what I'm hearing over and over and over. And also, of course, because of the competition, right? Because things are changing, the pricing, what they were getting as far as salary, what they're getting paid, that's changing. So just looking for, they're trying to actually get out of the industry. So because of congestion, long waits, of course, congestions at places like George Washington and everything, it's changing drastically. So kind of just want to know what's going on, you know, be a part of the conversation. Maybe I can help. We're very fortunate. We have an abundance of customers. We're right in Elizabeth, New Jersey. We do many trucks. We sell a lot of tires, and also we import containers of tires from China, Thailand, etc. So we're seeing what's going on with the containers coming in, and we're dealing with the port drivers. So I'll just thank you for having us. I just want to learn. But yeah, congestion. Here you go.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
And when there's no more questions from you, again, I just want to tack on one thing, if you think we're there.
Looks like we're there.
Okay, so I just want to mention that some of the folks in the room had brought up rail and the improvements, you know, in the state. So by the end of this year's grant cycle, New Jersey will have put $100 million into our rail infrastructure in the last 4 years, $25 million a year. So that's something we're really proud of in terms of the infrastructure that we're able to improve and to try to help with that modal split, perhaps a little, and developing our short lines where we can to help redistribute that traffic a little bit. So I think it's worth adding that and putting that out on the table as a real improvement. We'd like to see even more in the way of technology and maybe some more modernization of the system, but the system and the infrastructure itself was in such a hole that we're trying to address a fair amount of that first. And the other thing, and I think it was Byron, you that had mentioned it, but we are looking with our partners, hopefully at Middlesex County, but also statewide on Marine Highway opportunities where we can perhaps even get to some of the shift that Quincy's talking about, maybe eliminating some congestion from, you know, the really discrete centers and move transportation from other places source to source as opposed to having to cut through. So in the Office of Freight Planning and also our Office of Maritime Resources at the DOT, these are the strategies that we are looking at to try to improve some of these things. So always happy to talk about those. But I feel compelled to bring it home with Union County and Middlesex County, all of who are talking about these same things, that assessment of overall cumulative impacts of freight improvements really matters, because that example I told you where I think we have an opportunity off 80, this was a very sort of accidental conversation I ended up in at DOT. I asked about, well, how workers are going to get here, and how are the trucks and the workers and the quick checks on the other side of the road, and somebody's always got to pee and needs a cup of coffee, and the whole system, when you looked at it, I said, what are you, ex-developer, not Prologis, how are you looking at this? How do you think this strategy is going to work when you put in all these millions of square feet? And I sort of said, we're just a spec developer, you know? And that is a huge, huge concern. And I can't emphasize enough the points that our county partners are making. That has to change. This sort of, we have no skin in the game. The state will come in and fix it. Someone will come in and fix it. It'll be okay. It's not okay. We're just at a point because of the overdevelopment and these other things that our friends here at the table brought up. We have to shift that. And so maybe talking more about things Prologis, Arizona, some of these companies are doing, putting in coffee stations, bathrooms, truck staging, whatever the case may be, doing different things for their workers or shuttle services. We have to bring them to the table in a way that doesn't scare them because they see dollar signs, but to understand that if they want to do business here, that old sort of, we do what we do, you'll come in and fix it model has to shift.
Thank you. Do you want to go right into your 2-minute report, or?
I think that covers it. I will just add that we do expect in the next month-ish to be able to announce our rail and also our airport grant. Sorry about your airport. When I get the opportunity to do that at the next FIC, I'll bring them here and roll that out for you folks.
Okay, and I know that, so we're going through a transition in Middlesex. We're on a new transportation, we've created a new transportation department and a new head. I don't know if you met them yet. If you have, good. If you haven't, then we need to make sure that they meet with you. You know, and George also is involved in the process here. But since that water route conversation was brought up many months ago, it's something that I find very interesting, and I've taken back numerous times and since our sort of transition has gone on for a little bit, I'm hoping that the conversation picks up so that we're just as much of a part of that conversation as the state and also the property.
Yeah, absolutely. And Anne's helping us facilitate that as well.
Okay. And the good news is that the couple people that we brought on have come from the NJTPA, so they have some idea of what's being discussed. So, very good. Newark? No? Anybody else for a two-minute report? I'm sorry. Someone said, go right ahead. Port Authority.
Sure. So, for our Goods Movement Action Program at the Port Authority, we're looking at our 2020 work plan. And one of the items we're working on with our partners in both New York and New Jersey is continued development of a regional truck enforcement site network. So that includes looking at weigh-in-motion stations that are currently active, looking at areas where trucks can be pulled over for inspections, other inspection sites, count stations, those kinds of things. What we are finding from preliminary data is that in both states, we're looking at on major crossings about 15 to 20% overweight vehicles. So some of these vehicles have permits, many do not, and I want to emphasize that most of the problematic overweights are not your 53-foot trailers. They're not the kind of big trucks that communities hate. They're your single-unit trucks, small box trucks, and construction debris type vehicles that are overweight. Sometimes to an alarming degree, but some of them are double the weight they should be. That's the kind of thing that drops a bridge, not a big bridge, but a small bridge. So we are working with our partners to continue to get data from the active WIM sites and to find ways to keep the sites up and running. And we see this as basically advocacy for public investment. So like we've been talking here, you know, all our counties, agencies, we put millions of dollars into building and maintaining infrastructure. But what we've been a little bit weak on is enforcing this kind of small requirements that we ask so that we protect the public investment going forward.
Question. Union County. 2 minute free activities.
I can speak of this more in the next meeting, but we will be planning very soon a kickoff to our new truck mobility study, where we'll be looking at truck travel on county infrastructure and looking at how we can better plan for the movement of freight as our downtowns become more crowded and more thinking is federal lines of coaching the streets. So how does the freight moving through our county better, how can we better balance that with multiple modes of travel that are now coming quickly on our downtown areas. And so that everybody gets a share of the growth.
Thank you. Freeholder?
Nope.
Thank you.
So I have a couple of things. I don't know if Alan Kearns has mentioned this in the past, but I saw the agenda. We talked about the Plan 2050. New Jersey Transit is going to be undertaking an update to the state rail plan. And our plan is to work in concert with all the NPOs and the state DOT's long-range plan. Just to assure that the message is consistent. So you'll be hearing more in the procurement process, so that will take a little bit of time. The other thing, which is kind of an oddball thing, is we're keeping an eye on the situation in Canada. There's a major, major rail disruption that has shut down the Canadian National Railroad and Via Rail, which is like the Canadian Amtrak. And it is a protest movement having to do with the construction of a pipeline. I don't know all the details, but it seems to be evolving sort of, I guess, anti-environmentalist, there's an environmentalist kind of quote, you know, interest in this movement. There's concern that disruption can move into the United States. And so the AAR is looking at that. We're
thank you. Hudson? Freeholder? Yeah. Luke? Yeah. Sussex? Luke? Jacob, anything? All right. So at this time, 1 minute reports from meeting participants on anything. Go around. See nobody. The audience, George? Hold on a second. Let's get a microphone for you. Here we go.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Just one comment as I'm going around listening to the table around here with these plans coming up. DOT's coming up with a plan, county's coming up with a plan, municipality's coming up with a plan. Is there some way that we can get all these plans together into one plan and work together? And this is what I'm hoping, upon hope, that the state plan will come forward and come up with the elements of all these plans so that we can move forward with one plan and not have all these separate ideas because we go into like an octopus, we're all over the place. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Anyone else? All right, seeing none. I want to thank everyone for their participation today. Please mark your calendars for the next FIC meeting, which will be held on April 20th, 2020, and will feature our annual regional freight rail update. At this time, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Ocean and Union, and all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? I'm glad. News chair.